Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tola Talks with Rich Tola, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Rich Toll, and thanks for tuning in to my 21st century talk for a no-bullshit world. Because it is a no-bullshit world. Well, who wants to be fed the bullshit, right, Nora?
That's right, honey.
I have my dear friend, Nora Miller, in the studio today. Oh, wait till you meet her. She's author, psychic, past life specialist. So we're going to be talking past lives today.
Oh, my goodness.
We've known each other, what, like 7, 8 years now?
But not in a past life, though.
No, never in a past life, only in the current life. But no, we met a little while ago, and after about a year or so when I arrived to Hollywood, and we just became great friends. So I'm so psyched you're here. We're going to talk about your new novel, Detour on the Road Home.
Yes, indeed.
Wow, that's awesome. I read that back. I think the draft I got was maybe February, March?
It's somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, it takes another 6 months a year to get it out the door all shiny.
All kinds of polishing has to go into it.
Oh, I know it quite well. We'll talk about that. So we're going to be talking about the new book, really interesting book. If you wanted to know anything or have any knowledge of past life, you should definitely take a look. But we'll get to that. But I also want to thank yesterday's guest. What an inspiring story of dedication and perseverance. I don't know if you saw this, Nora, but this guy lost 250 pounds. Papa Joe. He's good. The brand...
That's a lot of weight, honey.
I'm like, holy cow, you're already done. Like, a lot of weight. 250 pounds in 18 months by walking 5 miles a day and eating at the 99 cent store exclusively. You know the 99 cent store.
I've been there once or twice.
This week?
Well, I won't tell.
You won't tell. No, maybe I saw you over there. I was there. But no, Papa Joe. I mean, no, truly, he got up to 450 pounds. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. He's a big dude. I mean, he's a tall guy to begin with, but he slimmed down to 200. Now he's their brand ambassador. He was at a store this morning. I talked to Papa Joe. Yeah, he was at any store openings. I mean, he's truly an inspiration. He's been on NBC. He's been on everything. Martha Stewart. Seen him all over. Mm-hmm. So check him out. If you want to check out that story, check out the archives, right? LATalkRadio.com/Tola.php. Listen to Papa Joe and... get some inspiration there about weight loss. And today we definitely have a great show planned for you. And we're going to be throwing back. It's TBT, Throwback Thursday. But we're going to do a little differently today because in your book.
Yes.
1942.
Very big year.
That's a big year. So we're going to throw back via Nora Miller's past life experiences, shall I say?
Well, I'll give you a clue.
Because I'm not sure if that was part of, I think it was part of your journey, because when I read that, I could truly feel you in there. But we'll talk about it, because I think this book is almost like a, is it true to life or based on truth?
It's inspired by true events.
Well, we're going to find out more. And on that note...
Oh, that's a great whoosh.
You like the whoosh?
I do.
Ooh, I know. Joanna's liking them too. She was cracking up yesterday. So yeah, love the swoosh. But we like to go around the globe for some top news stories. I'm calling this first one, Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo. Okay, what are we talking about? SoftBank. We talked about this the other day, yesterday, or 2 days back, about SoftBank trying to buy... The Japanese conglomerate was going after DreamWorks Animation, right? They want to be in Hollywood. Well, what did they do? The talks broke down with DreamWorks, so boom, they bought Legendary. They invested $250 million in Legendary Entertainment.
Everyone wants to be in Hollywood.
Everybody wants to be in the dogs and the cats. We talked about this one time. Well, the dogs and the cats have boyfriends, but they also want to be in Hollywood.
This is true.
That is true. The big get bigger, wouldn't you say?
Or they die.
Or they die, right. And oftentimes they get bailed out before they die. But I don't know if Papa Joe's case, the big did not get bigger. So kudos to the Papa and keeping it down. So, hey, there's some quick Hollywood news. Speaking of Hollywood, this next one, It's a Girl.
Yeah, okay, that's a question. Oftentimes out here.
That is a yeah, you're true. True to life. Well, congrats to Ashton Kutcher, who's 36, and Mila Kunis. I love her. She's 31. Gave birth to a baby girl on Tuesday, according to TMZ.
Congratulations
yeah,
to them.
Yeah, congratulations. So she delivered at, well, you know this, Cedars Sinai Medical Center in L.A.
I know where it is on 3rd.
Oh, yeah. I know it well. That 70s show, they were co-stars. Everybody knows that, right? And Mr. Kutcher, he divorced Demi Moore back in December of 2013, so about a year or so ago. And I don't think they're married yet. I'm not sure if Kutcher and Kunis are married.
Not quite sure on that one either.
Yeah. But the good news is she's taking a year off from acting to be a full-time mom.
Congratulations to her.
I think that's awesome. Hey, that's awesome. Mila Ashton, congrats. Good luck with the baby. Beautiful baby girl, I'm sure. Cool. Moving on. This one's called Are We There Yet? We're going over to Korea, North and South Korea. Now, have you ever been to Korea?
No, I haven't.
No, me neither. This is reported by CNN. We're just going to give you the quick, the broad strokes here. You could dig deeper, maybe, no pun intended, there'll be some more news coming out. But in South Korea, the general Han Sung-chu never believed that North Korea could actually dig a tunnel that reached Seoul. Well, until now, I mean, we're talking 25 miles.
25 miles?
Yeah, it said it's a 25-mile stretch to potentially get underneath buildings and the U.S. Embassy, perhaps. But he's called it an invasion. He said, North Korean soldiers are working underneath us. Apparently, they found three tunnels, 13 to 16 feet wide, 32 feet deep. Yeah, and they say that they said they haven't really found any new tunnels since 1990. This is where it got a little confusing. They said to date, there's been 20 tunnels found that crossed the border from north to south. Interesting. I'm not sure what that means, but what they did say is some of these tunnels might be there in the event that if there's a war that breaks out, people would dress up. Well, the North Koreans would dress up and U.S. Army uniforms, whatnot, and make their way through these tunnels and maybe break through. I don't know. It seems kind of far-fetched, but who knows?
That's a rather scary scenario.
Scary or dirty.
Yes.
Well, moving on, you can do some research there. Maybe there'll be some more news determined, but yeah. Anyway, the bad strain. This is another one of these virus stories, but I like bringing it to people's attention. Because you never know. This has mostly affected kids in the Southeast and the Midwest. But you never know. There was a child that died in Rhode Island last week from this. It's called Enterovirus D68. You ever hear that?
Not today.
Not today. Well, it is around today because there's dozens of types of this virus. And typically it's no big deal, Enterovirus. But this one in particular, D68, they said that's a naughty one. I mean, something about it makes it much worse, and they don't really know, but it'll land you in the hospital. Yeah, they said this has been around since the 60s, but they don't know why this one is a bad strain. Some of the mothers are like typical cold symptoms. Yeah, so this one here, I don't know, but this is dangerous, folks, because it says it's likely your child, what happens is it's not airborne, much like Ebola, which we'll talk about briefly. It's not airborne, but it's if your child has a history of asthma and a weakened immune system, or you get, you know, if you get a cold, bad symptoms, really bad symptoms, rash, weakness, paralysis, you got to go to the hospital. You got to seek attention. Average cold, it's okay. But they said this time of year with kids to kid contact in the schools, right, it spreads person to person. So, interesting.
Got to be careful in that one.
You got to be careful. You know, the flu, I read this too, kills 30 to 40,000 people a year.
Amazing. I didn't know that.
That's a big number.
It's a lot of humans.
That's a real big number. I'm sure there's different strains. So take a look. Look out for D68. All right. Speaking of viruses, this is an Ebola nightmare. Well, we talked about this twice this week. Got to put the... this is not the icing on the cake, folks. But it's now. Remember in Texas, they found a guy with Ebola who came from Liberia? Well, they thought he exposed only 18 people. Well, now it's up to 100 people that he's exposed. And not only that, the guys in the hazmat suits, you know, they're all suited up with the yellow suit. They're in four schools.
Four schools?
Four, like middle schools, elementary schools. I'm not sure, pulling their children from school. I didn't read too far deep into that. But this guy here, and Thomas Eric Duncan, he's 42 years old. He's the guy, they didn't release his name right away. But four members of his family were ordered to stay home. Yeah, because they said could possibly be that five students came in close contact with the guy over the weekend. It's kind of an interesting story because yesterday we were saying the CDC was saying that don't worry, we have this under control. Well, what does it mean to have a virus? How could you have a virus under control?
Right now, that's a big story.
Big story. It's killed 3,300 people to date in West Africa. There's 7,100 people been affected by it. Now, this guy, this is what's interesting. I was reading all about this. First of all, Ebola, it's not contagious until the symptoms appear. Okay, then it spreads by close contact with the patient's body fluids, right? This is one that's not airborne, not at all. But his neighbor said they saw the guy vomiting outside his North Dallas apartment complex. This is before they got him in there on Sunday. But the guy had spent, you know, September 26th, he went to the hospital, Texas Health Presbyterian, and they sent him home with antibiotics, said it was a low-grade virus. Wow, and they didn't quarantine him until Sunday. It's a couple of days later, 1 week after he got to the U.S., Yeah, this is a tricky one because you don't know. You don't know until you got the symptoms, bad symptoms, and then you go in, they test it, and even this guy, they kind of missed it first time through.
You don't want to overreact, but you don't want to not do what is needed.
Or be prepared when it occurs. Got to take action quick. And now it's that time of year. It's fall, right? It's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Wonderful.
And yeah, a lot of people, you're not getting the sicknesses from winter just yet. So we're 2-3 months away from all the sniffles. But if you're getting, especially with the kids back at school, things are going around. Got to check it out, parents. I mean, I'm not a parent over here. You're a parent over there.
Yes, I am.
Well, we won't even get all into that. Is that from a past life?
No, present.
That's your present life. Yeah, I guess that's got to be. Well, good luck with the Ebola over there in Texas. Hopefully it doesn't. My concern or thought was that the healthcare workers, you know, when a healthcare worker potentially gets infected, that's when things can get. But, well, to date, so far it's the one guy.
Let's just pray.
And speaking of the one guy, calling this Dear Mr. President, go purple and white. What are we talking about here?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what the hell? Give it a shout out to the students and faculty at Northwestern University in Evanston campus. That's where I did my graduate work. And President Barack Obama is delivering a major address on the economy there today. Yeah, can you believe it? Live streamed online. It's the first visit to the university by a sitting president in 60 years.
Wow.
That's a beautiful campus, let me tell you. Yeah, it's kind of cool that he's there. You know, he received an honorary Doctor of Laws degree from the university in 2006, of course, and that's when he gave the university commencement address. So he's been there before. Guy knows his way around Evanston.
It's a great place to be.
Great place to be. Beautiful time of year. Oh, I remember it well. The lake. It was awesome. Great experience there. So hey, have some fun. Checking in with the President of the United States. Hey, good luck over there. Let's go on here. This one's this is more closer to home for me. Well, only in the event that it takes place in New York City. Well, maybe not. Maybe not, Nora. You know some of my escapades, wouldn't you say?
Oh, one or two, but we won't necessarily talk about them.
No, we won't. This is called Sex Gone Wild. What are we talking about? A sex club in New York, in a New York office building. It's driving workers nuts.
Oh, Lord.
No pun intended. With their wild weekly events. And the cops are powerless to stop it. Can you believe? Let me tell you about this. This is at 27 Cliff Street. I know exactly where this is in the financial district. It's between Gold and Pearl Streets. It's kind of near John Street. Oh, I know it well. I'm visualizing exact location. Tech companies, research firms, and this really, really wild swingers club called the Amsterdam Society. I wonder why they use that word.
You know what? I might have a thought or two, but I'll hold them.
Have you ever been to Amsterdam? I've been to Amsterdam.
Again, another thought I'll hold.
You'll hold on that, because if you've been to Amsterdam, you surely know you've been to Amsterdam. Well, this is on the third floor. Takes place high up in the air. I wonder why. They call it, the club, that is, calls themselves the sexiest place around. One part Ibiza-style nightclub, one part Playboy Mansion. Well, let's talk about that. This is kind of cool. The New York Post, great paper, by the way, said the NYPD raided the place on September 19th, but everything was legal. They said they weren't doing anything illegal. But The people in the building, different story. They said that there were 8 mattresses moved up there, one guy said. Another guy said there's condoms in the trash, there's drugs in the lobby. Oh, the guy said, well, this is kind of cool quote. He says, I like this one. If they can go that long, God bless them, but we shouldn't have to hear it. What the hell are they doing going that long? They call it BYOL, bring your own lock. And they have these adult toy giveaways. Matter of fact, they do Freaky Fridays where they, I think it's this Friday. Tomorrow, I think it's Freaky Friday. They're advising participants to get naked and have fun after wearing body paint or kind of plastering themselves in body paint.
I'm not going to say anything about that personally.
Well, what can you say? They're having some good old-fashioned fun, old school. It's like a sex club. Mm-hmm. I got a buddy of mine from Brazil. I throw this out there. He's a gay guy. Told me about a house that they have that's like, it's some guy's townhouse or something, and they have parties twice a week. You know, one's sort of like a private party, another's like an open party, and they just openly have sex. Well, I don't know. I didn't know those clubs kind of, well, I guess some of them still do, right? Some of these nightclubs. I remember back in the day. Oof. Well, that's my memoir. Talk about the things that went on at the Black Banana in Philly. Ooh. Throw them back.
The Black Banana?
The Black Banana. I don't know if anybody's read that already, but if you've been in Philly, if you were in Philly in the early 80s, you know about the Black Banana. Oh, yeah. All the way through the 90s, I think. Yeah, I think the Black Banana had maybe a 12 or 14 year run.
What happened at the Black Banana? You're going to bring it up and you have to tell me.
Well, let's just say this. It was so dark in there that you got to be careful. You couldn't let go of your girlfriend's hand because probably end up with someone different. Oh, yeah. Bathrooms. It was so dark. It was this row home. It felt like it was 6 stories and it had one of those spiral staircases. You guys know this from Philly, from the older homes. You know, Philly's old, 1700s, they were built. Efforts Alley, one of my favorite streets in all of the world. Go check it out in Philadelphia, that Independence Mall area. It's beautiful. But some of these houses were built like straight up. You know, archways are smaller. They got the spiral. Well, the Black Banana was on a corner property, and it was wild. It was just so dark in there. And then some of the rooms, they would have like, this was like pre-computer days, right? But they'd be flashing, you know, the old flash machines, the flash drive where they flash a picture on the wall. I forget what that's called now. You know,
almost like a strobe light or something?
No, you know, those little microfilm, like you had like a cartridge with all these sort of microfilms. And they would just do these kind of flash and kind of weird, and people were laying in the corner. Everybody was, not a lot of furniture, and a lot of people sort of on the ground. Not sure. I might have fractured an occasional law or two. I'm not sure what the laws were. We're going to talk about that because, I don't know. Should we keep talking about the Black Banana?
Well, you know what, honey? I can't tell you what to do, but I'm curious.
Yeah. It was a wild time. They had the best music in town. Those are the days of Grendel's Lair. So anybody remember back in those days? Grendel's, there's pre-Delaware Avenue. Delaware Avenue is where some of the clubs formed right along the water there, Rock Lobster. I think this was pre that era, and it was just a cool time. I mean, it was post. It was interesting. Late 70s, early 80s. Anybody remember that? It wasn't like the 60s, but it was in a way. It was our 60s. Okay. That was what 17. Turn 17 in 1979. So it was that young. You're that teenager. I don't know about young love, but I fell in love with everybody at that point.
Sort of the disco era there.
The disco era was
a little bit of the pre-AIDS
end.
Times. And,
yeah,
you know.
Definitely pre-AIDS. That was like 85, right? 86.
Yes.
Nah, there was a freer time. I mean, you definitely were using condoms. I mean, I recommend that for everyone to be using condoms at all times, but it was definitely freer. No question. Wow. Thinking back to my senior year at Penn, senior week. Ooh. Dedicated a chapter to that. There's some wild times but there's wild times now. I'm not in that era now. Imagine being 20 years old right now, Nora. Maybe. I don't know about that. But on that note,
another whoosh.
Back to the future. That's a cool future swoosh, huh?
Yes.
We're going over to the Get Your Shit Together Award. Yeah, because speaking of sex and public places or Well, that wasn't a public place. That was a private establishment. Well, I don't know what you would have called it then, but it was a cool spot. Kudos to those guys back in the day. Yeah, check it out. Get your shit together. We know that. Everybody's got to get your shit together in some component of your life. But today we're giving the award. It's a couple. It's a tie. Well, they were coupled. And we're calling this Nowhere to Run, Nowhere to Hide. What are we talking about? A couple in Lady Lake, Lake County, Florida. You know where that is? It's kind of in the middle, right dab in the middle of the state. They were spotted having sex on the street by passerbys. They told police, this is what the couple told police when they nabbed them. They had nowhere else to go.
Nowhere else to go.
No, to have sex. No. James Adams, right? He was standing there naked in front of Charm Gilbert. That's a new first name I haven't heard in a while. Charm. Who, she was lying on an electrical box. I guess she needed to get charged up.
Apparently.
Maybe Mr. Adams over there was missing a few charges. Couldn't bring it to attention.
I see.
Right. Perhaps. Because this was at the intersection. I've never been to that town. I don't know, but I did look it up. It's on the corner of Morse Boulevard and El Camino. So if you want to go check it out, yeah, there's some trees there. It's kind of like a simple intersection. Almost feels like you're in an office park somewhere. Yeah. And they were taken to the county jail where they were charged with indecent exposure and disturbing the peace. I wonder if people are complaining about them being too loud or something.
I see.
Disturbing the peace. Bond set for $1,500 each. So, hey, you two, Mr. Adams and your girlfriend, Miss Gilbert, you get the Get Your Shit Together award for today. So get your shit together. Hey, guys, you shouldn't be having sex. I mean, I could say I definitely, well, at least I was covered up. I was talking about the one time I was in downtown Omaha, Nebraska. I shouldn't be talking too much about them. I guess I've had numerous, but, you know, if you're doing it, you can't be running around naked, right?
You can in San Francisco.
In San Francisco,
oh,
that's right.
Oh, I saw it in San Francisco.
Sex on the street?
Well, I saw two gentlemen walking around. They were as free as birds. Walking together, they were naked as jaybirds.
Naked? Well, they allow that in San Francisco, don't they?
They do, but that was the first time I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
So this was a
first-hand experience, no pun intended.
Well, I didn't lend a hand to that.
You did not lend. Well, you don't want to be lending a hand to two gentlemen.
No, I don't.
I mean, if it was just the one guy, maybe you could have, but no.
I might have been able to accommodate one.
That was the, well, that could have thrown back to another movie. Zach and Miri make a porn movie. Oh, that was a movie. That was a great one. I was going to make a joke that they make at the end, the two-handed rudder. But no two-handed rudders. No, the San Francisco is totally open about that. I've definitely seen people nude on the street when I lived. Was there for, 3 months? Just walk in when you walk south, when you're up on Sutter and Hyde and you walk south. Yeah, you just cut right through that slice of town, the Tenderloin. Anybody been there? You've been there.
I've seen it.
You've seen it. Well, speaking of seen it, you've seen a lot. And you've... No, this woman, we're going to get to you right now, okay? Nora Miller. I mean, you're brilliant. You really are. And this book that she wrote, we're going to talk about that because it really delves into past life regression. I mean, I did past life regression, PLR. And, you know, I checked this out on the internet today. I want to get your thoughts. This was kind of cute. How to remember your past life. Like, yeah, look up past life regression and you're going to get this. This will pop up. I don't know the website. But it's like this kind of colorful, cartoony, couple of page, I don't know, blog, I don't know what it is, but number one, do it yourself. And they kind of go into the whole meditation and the white light, you know, we'll talk about that. And number two, try hypnotherapy, which is what I did. It does work. Or number three, become metaphysical, get religion. I don't know about that, but kind of a simple way, but it's not that simple, is it?
No, it's not.
No. Let's talk about that, because past life, it has to do with soul memory and soul travel, correct?
That's correct. Okay. It does.
Okay. And Freud, Jung, and other psychologists agreed that the unconscious is hard to reach, if it can be reached at all, right?
It's difficult, but yet it's fully apparent throughout the day. 90% of what you do in your average day is because of the subconscious guiding it.
guided by the subconscious.
Yes. It's just the 10% that thinks, puts an overlay over that 90% and takes the responsibility. It's almost like it puffs up its chest a little bit and says that it's doing it, but it's fooled. 90% comes from below in the subconscious.
So let me get this straight. Okay. We are getting fooled. It's like the matrix.
Yes.
We are getting fooled. So the conscious kind of takes over, right? That's where the ego resides?
That is correct.
Okay. And the subconscious is where I'd studied this with Edgar Cayce, which acceptable behaviors. Well, all the hypnosis I did is as well. But talk about acceptable behaviors being formed at a young age. That gets buried down into your subconscious.
Oh, deep.
Most of the stuff does, right? Why do we do that? Why do we push it down?
It's an automatic response. It's not something that you're even aware of happening. It just is through habit, through just time, through repetition, and then all of a sudden it just becomes what we call second nature.
It's interesting. I'm going to give you a little story here. When I did hypnotherapy, you know I did hypnotherapy, and I knew you then. And my hypnotherapist, I remember giving me this example. She's like, you know what it's like? She goes, so you live in the house, and you have a beautiful lawn, big square lawn, and on the other side of the lawn, what's your favorite coffee? She's like, wherever it is, that's where your favorite coffee is, right there. So every day you wake up and you're like, well, let me cut through the lawn real quick because I'm in a rush, got to get my coffee. You cut through. Instead of going around on the sidewalk, you cut through, and then you cut through back, and nothing happens because, you zip through one time. Well, now, let's say 3 weeks later, all of a sudden you turn around, you go, holy shit, there's a path. There's a path there. So How do you stop that? Now it's like, I cut through. I kind of messed it up. What do I need to do? She's like, well, what you need to do is go around, plant seeds. It's clear it all out, plant seeds, and now go around. But what we want to do is homeostasis. We want to go back to what we're comfortable with. Cutting Correct. Across that grass, got comfortable. Then it's kind of like someone who gains weight, I think. When you start gaining weight and you reach that point of no return, you're like, F it. I can't, the grass, I might as well put a pathway there. That's what people do.
Exactly.
Because the hard part is going around. That's like going to the gym every day, working out, or being conscious about your food, or being respectful, or smiling every day. When you meet people, helping an elderly person get on the bus. I mean, that's what people, why do we have so much trouble doing that? Does the subconscious not sort of step in there and say, yo, buddy, get out of the way?
There is a reason why it happens. That which is familiar, that which is known, is called pleasure. That which is unknown is called pain. We seek pleasure, we avoid pain at all costs.
That's for sure. Avoid in many different forms, pain. Pain could be feeling embarrassed in front of someone. Like, could be anything. It's not just the physical pain. Right?
That's correct. It's mostly mental.
It's mostly mental. Yeah, no doubt. That's why people have difficulty taking chances, right? Taking risk. They go to that safe place and they're afraid. That's what you got to do. Everything we do, everyone, even yourself. I remember we talked, well, you've been working on short stories. I've read a bunch of your work, short stories, the books. But this past life regression, let me just say what Wikipedia says about it. Yeah, I kind of like going to Wikipedia. I'm not sure if all this is 100% accurate. It says, past life regression is a technique that uses hypnosis to recover what practitioners believe, because that's a questionable number, are memories of past lives or incarnations, though others regard them as fantasies or delusions or a type of confabulation. I even looked up that word, confabulation. I'm like, what the heck is that? Memory disturbance with a conscious intent to deceive. It's kind of interesting. Now, this psychiatrist, let me just say this. This I found really cool. This psychologist, Robert Baker, He demonstrates his belief in reincarnation, he says, is the greatest predictor of whether a subject would have a past life memory while undergoing past life regression hypnotherapy. So what he's really saying is, if you believe in it, you can go there. Here's what he did. He took 60 students, put them in three groups. The first group, he basically said they're going to be doing an exciting new therapy, kind of sold them on it, that's going to uncover their past. Second group, he said, well, we're going to try this therapy. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't work about recovering your past or uncovering. And then third group, he said, this is crazy therapy we're going to do. Normal people don't usually respond to it, but we're going to try it anyway. And of all these groups, the first group was 85% successful. Second group, 60%. Third group, 10%. Kind of says, Well, hey, if you believe that anything's possible and that you potentially have a past life, which I do, then you're more open to it, correct?
Or? It suggests it, but it also suggests that belief is a matter of being open to the possibility. And that's probably the biggest factor, is that if you actively resist something, there's a good chance it's not going to come up.
Mm. Correct. Resisting. Resisting anything is it's preventing you from having it, achieving it, right? Getting it.
Success is mostly mental. Certainly, it's helpful to have a nice Rolodex. But the thing is, if you take the position that, no, it's not going to happen, I'm not going to have that money, that house in the hills, whatever it may be that's important to you, what will usually happen is that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You probably won't get it.
You're not getting it. Nope. No, if you don't believe it, that all things possible, and you say it to yourself, you have to visualize it. I do that. Do you do visualizations?
All the time.
All the time. Well, you're just visualizing stuff from 1942.
Yes, I am.
Speaking of 1942, I want to talk about this book. Let me talk a little bit about this book. Detour on the Road Home. Wow. I read this book. Well, I told you, I like to, well, I have it in the draft format, folks. So it's like the pages. It's kind of cool, old school. And I went to the library. I love going to the library. I think I read this in 2 days, two stints at the library, maybe 2, 3, or 4 hour stints. I mean, first two sentences. Do you mind if I read the first two sentences?
Go ahead.
Okay. Howard, I have bad news. With that, Dr. Stryker began. Okay. It's like, well, of course the guy's got bad news. It's like, what the hell is coming next? You know, it's like death is impending. And Dr. Stryker, what a name. I love that Dr. Stryker. First five pages, we're talking about death, ghosts, past life, lives, experiences, business, money, the Mother Mary. I mean, talk about that. And then we soon learn he's a private eye. He's a dick. No pun intended. Howard yes. Berman. And what's going on? You come out of the gates. I will say you come out of the gates like one of these Secretariat. I love Secretariat. One of the greatest racehorses of all time.
I remember him.
Yeah, Secretariat came out of the gates like a banshee.
Yes.
So what's happening here? You really hit the pedal to the metal. I love it. Right out of the gates. And it's like you throw a lot at us out of the gates. But you don't become endearing with the character. That's going to give you time. And what's up with this blue cloud, by the way?
The blue cloud.
Ooh.
Oh.
Let's talk about the blue cloud.
The blue cloud.
What is the blue cloud? And talk a little bit about Howard Berman. Like, how do you want to present the story?
Well, key thing is, answer your question as far as the blue cloud or what I call the blue light. That happened to me about 21 years ago. I happened to be with a friend. I was vacationing. And all of a sudden, on this friend, a blue light appeared. It was about the size of a silver dollar. And it just began to float in the room. I hadn't had anything to drink. I wasn't, you know, don't take drugs or anything like that. I wasn't sleepy or anything like that. Mm. I checked for the lights, make sure there wasn't, you know, someone having some type of early laser light or something like that. And this light just kept moving and finally went to my friend, went up their body, and then when it went to their face and right over what would be considered, some people call it the third eye area. It's basically between the two eyes, right above the nose. It just stayed and it began to vibrate. Well, I blinked several times because I'm thinking, okay, I'm nuts. And what I'm seeing is not happening, but it didn't go away. And it stayed there for about a minute. And then for a moment, then it broke away and it floated out of the room underneath a door, hole underneath the door. Hmm. And so I asked my friend, this person was asking me, what in the world was happening? Because my mouth was naturally had dropped on the floor, you know, jaw was on the floor there. And they mentioned that they have, you know, I explained what had happened. And they said, that's interesting, because they, in the past, have had several other people who said they saw the same light on them.
Really?
Yes.
Same location, same light?
Same location, and they had not told me about this beforehand. I didn't know this. And from that point on, for the last 21 years, that light will appear as often as twice daily. it doesn't go longer than my seeing it once a week. That's the longest period of time where I'll go without seeing it. But it always appears.
It appears. On people, places, things?
Yes.
What does it mean? What do you think it means?
I've been told what it means. In a very, very quiet moment, I ask, okay, what do you want me to know? You're showing me something. If you are a who, if you are a what are you? What is this about? And a very, very quiet voice on the inside said, it just lets you know that we're with you. Just stay quiet and let us guide you.
See, you're guided. No, I know this too. You are guided from internally.
I try to be.
You try to be. Because you talk about, we talk a lot about this, about being quiet. Being quiet and to listen.
Yes.
And two big words.
Yes, it is. It's one of the big themes that runs through the novel.
And it runs through your life as well.
Exactly.
So, what happened in 1942?
Well, 1942, I wasn't alive in this present body, but I was living in Los Angeles in 1942. I was born in 1916. I was already a young woman at that time. I was married, and I was about ready to meet my husband for lunch at a Brown's Bakery over on Wilshire Boulevard in the Miracle Mile area of Los Angeles. I was about ready to go ahead and meet my husband there. And it's part of that meeting has a lot to do with some of the dynamics of the story. And I had an instant flashback of that meeting in this lifetime.
The way you describe that miracle, I mean, I lived in the Miracle Mile. I used to practice yoga right near there. Where the way you describe in the book even, just exactly what was happening on that particular day, you were there.
Yes, I was.
And you, now, this is a woman that, well, you grew up in Los Angeles, correct?
That's correct.
And you're from here, so you've been all over this town. You know it well. And you weren't alive in 1942.
No, I wasn't.
And did you compare to pictures or anything else that was happening? Were there pictures from this era? Because you describe it to a T, what the buildings was happening. I mean, you really do.
When I've been in the Miracle Mile, in that section of it, there has always been a strong sense of familiarity long before I had lived in the area. There was just a sense that I know this area, and yet I didn't know why.
Well, you keep going back. No bullshit. There's been several times. You're like on Wilshire a lot. Like when we would speak, you would be, well, I'm a... And even up to Robert Kennedy's, they turned it into a museum, right? The high school? Ambassador Hotel down to like almost La Brea Tar Pits.
Correct.
You have a gravitational pull to that area, I'm going to call it that. You're pulled there. Even now, like whenever you come to visit, right? Because you're living in a different place, you're traveling around. You seem to go there, huh?
I do. I do.
There's some other stuff in this book. Addicts, Skid Row, you talk about Beverly Hills, and how about our buddy Frank DiCarlo?
Frank, the name of my husband.
Was Frank DiCarlo.
Frank DiCarlo.
The guy you were going to meet. This is the 1942 story you're telling.
That's correct.
And what happens?
Well, Frank is, according to the novel, Frank is... He makes money. He makes a lot of money, but he doesn't make it in... I would call it a savory way.
Savory way. Is he Italian?
He's Sicilian.
He's Sicilian. You know, I'm Sicilian. Of course. Well, keep going.
There may be a connection.
S's match. Savory and Sicilian.
Yes, indeed.
Been called, well, never mind. Sicilian.
He's my husband. He's Italian. He's very tall, rather slender man. Key thing is that he makes his money during and after the war through bootleg activities. Whatever can be made, you know, however he can make money and lots of it, he does it.
If it falls off the truck, you mean?
Yes, it does. Yeah. A lot of really rickety trucks back then.
A lot of rickety trucks or things that fall off the truck and in mint condition, unbroken bottles of alcohol.
Amazing how, you know, I guess they were packed really well.
They really were. They had good packaging, good packages back then.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. I'm sure he did. Your husband. You remember that?
I do.
And you do. You describe, yeah, this is what. So, is the book about you?
It's based on a lot of experiences that I've had in my life, and also experiences that I've had helping people through hypnotherapy, helping them to be able to pull up past life events. But the interesting thing that I found is that I could not dial in when these revelations or when these insights would occur. I would just, in the middle of nowhere, taking care of something that was totally unrelated, have a clear insight of an event. I would see things that would happen either in 1942 or during that period of time, or get clarity as far as why a particular thing has happened that I saw maybe 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, throw us back to 42. I mean, I clearly wasn't around. Throw us back to 42. Just talk a few minutes about what was it like in 42, which you weren't on the planet, but what was it like?
Well, this body wasn't on the planet, but this soul was in the form of this woman who's one of the protagonists in the story. And it was a different world back then. We were in the middle of World War II. Physically, I was much smaller than I am right now. I was barely 5 feet tall, maybe 95 pounds. Mm. Wasn't quite as blonde back then. Key thing is the world was much different. Men wore hats everywhere. They wore suits. Women wore dresses. There was no... we weren't as expressive back then as we are in today's society.
A little bit more polished in a way.
In many respects, they were. There was a sense of civility, which is perhaps wanting right now.
Perhaps. It's definitely wanting.
Yes.
Civility. Well, there's no doubt that that era was, that was the swing. Well, then that was the 20s, was like the roaring 20s. And then in the 40s when things got rough.
Yeah, it did. The war was the big rallying point for the country. The United States was united behind it. We had a common enemy. We wanted to defeat the Nazis and the Japanese. And so it was a very, very heightened time as far as awareness. People were focused, and they were less focused on themselves.
That I can understand. Less focused on themselves because there was unity in a different way. Here and here, there's unity, but it's so, I guess, widespread.
Yes,
right. Groups or factions of unity, but no, there was some true unity then. And I didn't think the aspirations were different. You couldn't become a billionaire overnight back then.
You couldn't, no. And so there was the sense that you worked hard. There was the idea that anyone could grow up to become president of the United States, and that it was a lofty ideal, and people believed that. And they worked hard, and family was a big thing. Getting married, having children. We were just coming out of the Depression. And so people wanted to go back to normalcy, which they had suffered for, they had suffered privation for since, 1929 when the stock market crashed to the beginning of World War II.
Yeah, my parents are born in the, 30s, 40s, early 40s. I mean, there's no doubt that the work ethic, the people that were built back then, they're like, machines. They turn it on and they keep going. Here, it's like everybody's like, they're weak. People are weak.
No one whined back then.
Nobody
you just
minds.
Did
no
your
crime.
Job. You had defined roles. Men did what men were supposed to do, and it was well defined what that would be. Women supported their husbands. They took care of the family. They took care of the children. And this is how society was set up back then.
Like a well-oiled machine. I mean, albeit it wasn't an advanced piece of equipment, right? Like
true.
The Edsel.
True.
But it ran well, and things, people cohabitated quite well. I mean, probably difficult times, but it's interesting to see my parents now, how they interact with my nieces and nephews who are, again, without a phone attached to their hand. I don't know. That's a different world that we didn't have.
I would say that it was quieter. My father spoke of that it was a time where you were much more self-sufficient. And you entertained yourself.
Had to be. There wasn't all that noise out into the universe that you can just turn your focus on nowadays, right? It's a lot of noise. Speaking of noise, there's a lot of noise and intrigue in this. I want to use that word, intrigue, because you have interwoven lives in this story, in this book. Detour on the Road Home.
I mean,
everybody's sort of connected, although takes you some time, get your arms around everybody, and once you see it, it's sort of like they're interwoven, but they're locked. They're kind of like one does nothing happens. It's like a dynamo effect. It's got to affect one affects the other, right?
Yes, it does.
And that's why all roads lead to this. I like that. What about this SRO hotel fire disaster? Because kind of like all roads lead to that towards the end, right?
Yes, it does.
SRO is a single room occupancy. You guys know what that is, right? Bathroom down the hall. They were really popular. I mean, in New York, they were popular in the early 90s as well. But you really detail. Was that the Rosslyn?
That was the Rosslyn Hotel, 5th and Main.
5th and Main. Still there.
It is still there, yes.
What I really like here is when you talk about the Victor Martinez's of the world. Right? What he stands for. This is a gentleman in the book who, whatever, however you want to talk about it, but his, how would you define it? His condition in life or his, what do you say?
I would characterize him as a great white shark or a piranha with two legs. His role in life is to make sure that he hurt as many people as possible and he gloated over people's pains. And he's a very important part of this book.
Right. That society, well, like I said, almost like the guy has a condition. He's conditioned to destroy.
He's one of those rare individuals whose sole purpose is to bring pain to others.
And they exist.
They do exist.
They do exist. And what do you think should happen to these people?
Well, you just asked me a question. Well, if we had a few less of them, that would be better.
Yeah. I agree with that. I agree with that. And the whole concept that, well, I talk about capital punishment, but do you believe in capital punishment?
I do.
So do I. Interesting. When people don't, well, I don't know. But this is kind of interesting because that's kind of when, what's great about this book, it's like almost like a movie and like the shit hits the fan. But you know it's coming. But you don't really know how it's coming. You're thinking, no, really, it's like, does he suffer, right? I mean, he's sort of like the lead, he's our lead, right? Our boy Howard.
Yes, Berman.
He's the man. He's the, I would say he's not a hero. He's almost the anti-hero.
In many respects, he's a guy who's seen it all. He's had to grow past the theory and what he would like life to be. And he's learned to deal with life on its terms. He tries to have some ethics. He tries to be a fair and generous individual. But when he's with sharks, he has to bite himself.
Yeah. He tries, but, yeah. And I was in that world of real estate. He's in the world of real estate. He's this, like, tycoon. You wouldn't even know it. You don't know it until a little ways into the story, how rich this guy is. But then again, he's got, doesn't matter. The money doesn't really work for him.
No, it doesn't. And I've met many persons like that. They would drive a very, very modest car. In this case, Berman doesn't. He drives a wonderful Mercedes-Benz. But you would never know that this person was loaded to the gills.
No. Well, that happens frequently. Let me ask you this in one sentence, because we're winding down here. In one sentence or a phrase, or however you like to say it, what does the story convey?
Pay attention to your intuition. And what you know in your deepest sense will be accurate, even if it makes no sense to anyone else.
Love it. Listen to your inner self. Pay attention.
Yes.
You got it. And on that note, we're going to go right into the Fast Five. So here we go. Nora Miller. Well, that was some good stuff. Past Life Out. We'll learn more about you. When's this book going to be in hard print? Pretty soon, right?
Yes, very soon.
Soon. So it's called Detour on the Road Home. Check it out. Nora Miller. And we're going to do the Fast Five. So first, whatever comes to mind, we're going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Pick one. Learn your personality here. Chocolate or vanilla ice cream?
Vanilla.
How did I know that? Right, with the blondie here. Number two, Tropical Island or New York City?
Tropical Island.
Really? I didn't think you were a sun worshiper. Okay, all right. Number three, I think I know this one.
Let's see.
Ancient Rome or the Wild West?
Ancient Rome.
Really? You wear cowboy hats. I've got to put you in the Wild West.
No.
No, ancient Rome, I see. There you go. Number four, tearjerker or action thriller?
Tearjerker.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Although this book is not a tearjerker. Not really. Well, there's some heartfelt moments.
There are.
Mm. All right, lastly, number five, candlelight dinner or picnic in the park?
Candlelight dinner. I don't like mosquitoes.
You don't like mosquitoes, or who the hell does? Well, that's awesome. So, you know, we had a lot of fun today. Thanks so much for coming in. Nora Miller, so you're visiting, right? You're visiting California?
I am visiting California, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for coming by. So, yeah, check it out. You need to know some more about me, check out richtola.com, right? You know the archives, latalkradio.com/tola.php. And, yeah, remember, dreams do come true. But, hey, what do I know?
You're listening to Tola Talks with Rich Tola, right here on LA Talk Radio.